and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard. This is WTCM News Talk 580. It's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. And the trio is in. Hail, hail. The gang is here, led by Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. Great to be here. Thank you so much to you and to those of you who are listening. And today is 8-20-2020. I'm sure you've already said that today, Ron.
Oh, it is 8-20-2020, isn't it?
Isn't it crazy? Mm-hmm. It's kind of confusing, frankly.
And this morning at 8:20, it was 8:20 on 8-20-2020.
And tonight, it will be 8:20.
That's right. So we can still do that tonight.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
We'll all be watching the convention, so we'll totally lose track of time there. All right.
Okay. Yeah. So
who else were going to talk today? Finance, but we couldn't help ourselves. Now, could we? You know, Heidi Thompson has joined us.
Good morning.
Our managing executive and also financial representative. Thank you for joining us, Heidi. And Shay Pataja as well, our CXO.
So we are here today, gathered here today, to talk about what's your theme today?
The theme today is the financial information and news of import, because it is significant, as shown through some information and news regarding Warren Buffett and a significant change that's been done or organized through Berkshire Hathaway. What's happening there and what it means to you, possibly, to the financial markets in general, and what you might do about it, given those significant changes. And then Shay will help bolster that information with some of the actual stats that relate to that as well. So I think you'll find it interesting. Now, this information from Warren Buffett is nothing short of, I would liken to, a shot across the bow, because they bought gold miner Barrick Gold, BARRICK GOLD.
That's the ticker.
Symbol for the stock is GOLD. That's why I gave it some emphasis. They slashed their Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan stakes amid the coronavirus. Now, many of you who do follow financial information may have seen this, but I think you may find this interesting in terms of some additional information as well. During the last quarter, Berkshire slashed its positions in financials, Berkshire Hathaway, including Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan Chase. Specifically, Berkshire cut its J.P. Morgan Chase stake by 61%. That is 35.5 million shares, not a small amount of money, to last own 22.2 million shares at quarter's end. Berkshire also cut its Wells Fargo holdings by 26%, selling 85 million shares to last own 237 million shares. Let's talk about huge amounts of money. A stake worth $6.1 billion at quarter's end. Berkshire also exited its entire stake in Goldman Sachs. I think given their political incorrect name, I think that was probably a part of it, Goldman Sachs. I
mean, really, why is that politically incorrect?
Well, I'm just thinking this old Saturday Night Live skit about Goldman Sachs at the height of the big recession in 08, 09. It was a big joke.
Goldman Sachs.
How dare you have a name like Goldman Sachs.
Oh, Goldman.
Goldman
Sachs of gold.
Yeah. They sold the remaining approximately 2 million shares. Now, Rob, our own advisor, says, in my opinion, these portfolio moves are highly significant, especially when combined with both Warren and Charlie's. They are the two leaders of Berkshire Hathaway. Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett. Their cautious negative comments in March, when they, for the first time in decades, declined to take advantage of the stock market weakness. So, point number one, they weren't in there buying when this thing really got weak. Probably adding to some people's consternation about why aren't they in there buying to buy cheap stocks. Instead, they dumped all of their airlines into ongoing weakness and reduced their financials. Berkshire's selling of their portfolio's financial holdings was very widespread, led by the surprising J.P. Morgan liquidation. And then they go on to list, he goes on to list that in some more detail. Some of these bank holdings Berkshire Hathaway has had for decades. This implies that they see something important and negative going on, according to Rob. Well, obviously, if they're selling, they do view this as negative. Now, what's interesting as well, which Rob doesn't write in here, he said to me personally 6 to 8 weeks ago, Scout's Honor, Dennis, if Warren Buffett and Charlie were doing what I think they ought to be doing, they would be selling all their financials. He said that to me in a conversation about 6 to 8 weeks ago. Why? Because of today's low interest rates, making it very difficult for banks to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And this environment, these analysts believe, is going to continue for some time, making it a continuing difficult environment for banks to make profits in this the current lending environment, as well as the interest rate environment. And what does this mean, or what is it? Well, let's go back to history a bit. Charlie said a few years back.
Charlie
said, Munger.
Love my good
Charlie
and plenty.
Says, not Brown, Munger, thank you. Gold is a great thing to sew into your garments if you're a Jewish family in Vienna in 1939. But I think civilized people don't buy gold. They invest in productive businesses. Just, you know, slash and burn. Ouch. Mm. Yeah. In a speech delivered at Harvard in 1998, Buffett said, gold gets dug out of the ground in Africa or someplace. Then we melt it down, dig another hole, bury it again, and pay people to stand around guarding it. It has no utility. Anyone watching from Mars would be scratching their head. Hmm. What does a Martian look like scratching their head? I don't know, but you get what he's saying. They totally despised gold and the reasons possibly for owning it.
Yeah.
Well, so what that simply is saying, secondly, is the huge sea change that they view in regards to central banks' attitudes about lending significant amounts of money, huge amounts of money, as will be detailed in the Shea Stats to follow the break.
Lots of Shea Stats. Yep.
So, you know, sometimes you see these sea change when people, and obviously Warren and Charlie were not born yesterday. Charlie Munger is over 90 years old. Given that sea change, what does that mean to us in our own investing information and views we might hold about owning assets such as these?
Did you start this off by saying Berkshire Hathaway sold all their J.P. Morgan and their financials and put it into gold? They bought some kind of gold stocks?
Well, they bought gold with a very, let me clarify, to be sure, a very small relative portion of their total portfolio. They bought a paltry, I think it was 21 million shares of Barrick Gold. It's like a drop in the bucket. But nonetheless, it is a significant change in view.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you say, well, how much weight should I give that? Well, given history and what they've done, especially in the financials, you should take a look at that.
Is there a concern about inflation at all part of this, do you think, with all the federal dollars flooding the marketplace?
Inflation in the form of currency devaluation. What, pray tell, are the heck you talking about? It just means it's another form of inflation because the currency declines because of all of this cash going into the system. We talked about, I think, that a couple of weeks ago. As you have any commodity that becomes overdone, I mean, if you look at sweet corn along the side of the road, if there are three different stands, they tend to get competitive with each other, perhaps. and just trying to liken it to what you might see today. Well, given all that cash that's been put into the system through the push of the federal government to try to get the economy off its knees, it, in essence, is creating a decline in our currency value. And I just, perchance, was looking last week, Anyway, by happenstance, I was looking at the comparison of the U.S. dollar to the British pound. And I was surprised to see that in the last since March 23rd, it's down about 20% against the British pound. So that's one indicator of the U.S. currency's declining value. And what that means is that goods and services tend to increase in cost. Well, because, you know, a fair number of people have a lot of cash out there.
By the way, just looking at gold on Tuesday, August 18th, when was that? This week.
Oh, yeah, 2 days ago.
It was up there at like 2022. Today, though, has been down since then. It's at 1938.
Yes, but it does fluctuate.
It also matters because people are watching what Warren Buffett does. So when he does things, it tends to create a following. So it's a big deal for him to do something he said he would never do.
He would never do.
Yeah.
And Dennis, this takes us back to, I know last year we had a show where we were talking about the currency and the U.S. being the base currency for the world markets, and how that we were coming towards the end of a cycle, because in the early 1900s, the British pound gave over to the U.S. dollar. And here we are in this century, and we said we're coming towards the end of that period, and now we have all these pressures. So putting those things together, just you want to be more aware of these things.
You do. I always have to be careful how I say this and not give too much import to what I say. Frankly, I discount it because these things fluctuate. Mm-hmm. As Ron just brought up, the price of gold. It's never a straight up price change. It's, well, if you look at gold a year ago, Ron, for maybe some further perspective, it's very interesting.
Much higher. Yeah, what's it now? What did I say? It's at 1945.
It's about 2,000.
A year ago, it was at 1,500. So yeah. It's up 400 points or whatever you call that.
Right.
It's up almost 25%.
Correct. So Warren also famously said gold is a way of going long on fear. And it's been a pretty good way of going long on fear from time to time. But you really have to hope people become more afraid in a year or 2 years than they are now. And if they become more afraid, you make money. If they become less afraid, you lose, and the gold itself doesn't produce anything. So he has definitely been latched on to companies that actually produce goods and services, whatever means or form or fashion that might be. But obviously this points up to their concern for the change in view from the Federal Reserve and putting this much cash into the economy to inflate it out of where it's currently been. Now, there have been several pieces of information and related as in relation to that, in terms of significant cash coming into the economy. But we're not going to go into those things because they would put people to sleep. So before we go to the first break, we have a call, phone call.
TJ's on the line from Levering, Michigan. Good morning, TJ.
Good morning, good morning. I was very curious about Warren Buffett. You know, Berkshire hasn't done that well in the last 5 years. Number one, and
number two,
they just bought 12% of Bank of America.
Mm-hmm. They did. Thank you for that. Indeed. And some would view that as simply a way of transitioning or moving a portion of their assets into another financial. Bank of America is the strongest bank in the United States of America by far. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that is It is still getting some exposure to the financials, I would say, in case they're wrong.
Right. But what do you think about their performance of the last 5 years?
I would totally agree with you. It's not been that good.
So you're using a source that, and it seems to me, you've put the whole show on Berkshire Hathaway and what Warren and Charlie are doing, and they may not be the people to follow them right now.
Great point. Mm-hmm. As other people would disagree with you, sir. But a great point nonetheless, because they haven't done that well. I totally agree. But what's interesting is the financial markets still watch them very closely. And what if they're right? Could be another side of it as well.
What I was saying or hearing is just that this is a sea change. You take two giants of the investment community.
Yes.
And they go back on their view, 180 on their views on gold. Mm-hmm. Whether they're right or not, it's earth-shattering.
I guess, in that
field.
Yes. Yeah. And what's interesting is our own advisor, I sold his Berkshire Hathaway stakes probably 8-10 years ago to bolster what this gentleman is saying. Mm. So I can't disagree with their performance. At the same time, it still, as you just said, Ron, very interesting indeed, given their experience, their depth of experience, and their long-term track record, which has been amazing, and their knowledge base. This is an incredible change for them. So I think it's worth mentioning indeed. All right. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks, TJ. And to follow with what TJ is saying, the goal of the show today is to read through the stats and facts and then interpret them as best we can. So that news this week was all over headlines regarding Warren Buffett. So we're going to keep going through more of them that will make you think one way or the other. It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah. Good.
Okay, so we've got some fun stats today for you to interpret as you will, but we'll get the advisors to weigh in on this. Since bottoming on March 23rd of 2020, the S&P 500 has rallied and gained 51.9% total return through the close of stock trading as of last Friday. And I know this Tuesday, we even beat that record. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it eclipsed it. It was above the previous high, I think, set on February 11th of this year. So it says a lot, again, about the amount of money that went into the economy, as we've talked about from the Fed, and making stocks much more hopeful, much better value. Talk about a V formation. That's incredible to look at. And relatively easy to see. The response has been amazing to watch. Amazing.
Okay. The top 10% of American wage earners making at least $145,000 a year in pre-tax income own 88% of the U.S. stock market, and that's from BCA Research.
It's a relatively large number of, a large amount of money, because you're talking about millionaires and billionaires owning their, having a significant part of their portfolios in the stock market through stocks, their companies that they might own themselves. And that, obviously, that's huge. Amazon, Jeff Bezos, his net worth, I think he's overwhelmed and overcome even the likes of Buffett and Gates in that, and even the Walton, I think perhaps, or the whole Walton family, although I'm not sure about that. Mm. Huge numbers. So that does partially skew that, but it still is of interest. Where are they getting their wealth? In the stock market.
Interesting. All right. The bond market has produced a negative total return in just three of the last 44 years, so 1976 through 2019. The down years were 1994, 1999, and 2013. The bond market was up 6.9% year-to-date total return through the close of trading on Thursday, August 13th of 2020. And that is from Bloomberg. How do you interpret that?
It's a great stat to take a look at in terms of where is the value. It's probably not in bonds right now because of the significant increase we've seen this year and because of historic lows in interest rates, which Ron keeps harping about. He just won't be quiet about it. Really, Ron, I mean, come on.
That's me.
Jeepers.
It also speaks to the bond market has much less volatility, why we see the stock market up one year, down the next, up, down.
Mm-hmm.
The bond market tends to be a little more steady.
Mm-hmm.
Since the beginning of 2020, the size of the money market fund industry in the USA, both taxable and tax-free, has grown from $3.6 trillion to $4.6 trillion as of Wednesday, August 12th.
Hmm.
And that's from the Investment Company Institute.
Now, why would people put money into something that earns absolutely nothing?
Because they're frightened of the stock market after that huge dive in March.
Mm-hmm.
You think?
What else does it say?
It says they're just scared.
Mm-hmm. And?
And?
Given that they put all their money in money market funds, what was their yield since the decline?
Well, they what 6.8? No, that's it. That's the amount of money.
That's bonds, but in money market funds because they
probably
yielding zero.
Minimal. I mean,
yeah, basically zero.
Yeah.
And what would have their return been in the markets themselves?
Go back to the first stat there.
Yeah. Some people have said it's been up like 50%. Since that time, so generally, the crowd is wrong. Crowd is wrong on this stuff.
Money market.
It's a good lesson for us all. And believe me, it's something that I try to practice myself. Which way is the crowd going? As the old book from, the veterinary book, All Creatures Great and Small. He was talking to a very successful farmer. He said, sir, how have you gained all your success? Well, when all one crowd goes one way, I just go to the other.
Yes.
Yep.
I like it.
All right. Shay.
The U.S. government forecasted on Monday, August 3rd, that it will borrow $4.5 trillion during the fiscal year of 2020, the last 12 months ending since September 30th. That total exceeds $3.8 trillion borrowed over the previous four fiscal years, 2016 to 2019.
So say that. How much is borrowed this year again?
This year they will borrow $4.5 trillion during this fiscal year.
Wow. $4.5 trillion.
Yeah. It exceeds the $3.8 trillion borrowed over the previous
four fiscal years.
Wow.
So more in 1 year than the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that would bolster the concern and or the argument of Buffett, Berkshire, looking at having some, it's not just a fear-based asset. It's an asset that tends to produce or go up when our own currency goes down. So calling it just a fear asset from this other side is simply looking at it from a narrow view. It's not just a fear asset. It's an asset that tends to go up in certain periods of time.
Can we take a break in Shea Stats and take a call?
You bet, sir.
It's 23 before the hour. Prout Financial Designs on the air with New Retirement Radio, and Hugh is in Traverse City. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning. Question.
Sure.
What is currency credit derivatives, and how does this $692 trillion affect the nation's wealth?
Currency credit derivatives. Well, I'd have to get my encyclopedia to figure out what that is.
Yeah, it's $692 trillion, so that's...
you're talking about the derivatives market.
Yeah, but that's a lot
of
money.
It is. Well, it's all the hedges people have put on our own currency. Mm. How much did you say that was, Hugh?
$692 trillion.
Boy, that's a lot of money.
Debt clock.
Wow.
Does it? What does it do to affect our wealth?
Well... It does
a
lot.
Bad idea.
And if they've bet wrong, look out. It does a lot to affect our wealth in terms of there are a lot of people betting on our currency and currencies around the world to protect their trade because global trade is so huge. There are a lot of reasons to own currency credit derivatives, but it is also can also be a very aggressive way to invest. So, yeah, I... It just says that there are a lot of people betting on the price of currencies and the value of currencies around the world.
Hmm. Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Hugh.
Thank you, Hugh. 21 right. before the hour.
I want to clarify when it says the size of the U.S. economy. What are they? What's the U.S. economy? What does that mean?
Gross GDP. Domestic product, GDP. That's a total goods and services produced by our economy, United States of America, over a one-year period.
We sell internationally, any product we sell.
Yes.
Would that be like, so if
and
you
or
took,
produce, you know, to have sold, yeah.
If you looked at every company in America, the revenue they took in, would that be the same thing? I mean, they produced, 1 million cars, but maybe they only sold 800,000. I don't know. Is that? I'm just trying to get an image here.
It would pretty much be the revenue, but it would revenue is not always a pure indicator. It's all the goods and services produced, but it's one way to take a look at it. Yes, okay. The gross.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you some perspective here, and this is from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. So 30 years ago, the size of the U.S. economy was $6 trillion. 20 years ago, it was $10.2 trillion. 10 years ago, it was $14.9 trillion. And the size of the U.S. economy was $19.4 trillion as of June 30th, 2020, which was down only $2.3 trillion from the $21.7 trillion recorded in December. So we've dropped a little, but that's where we're at now, $19.4 trillion.
Okay. That's interesting to note. Did you say 30 years ago was it $6
trillion? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about we looked at that increase. It's about a 4% or so increase per year over the 30-year period. I think it's about 3.6 or something, we figured. Yeah.
This is from the Office for National Statistics. Ooh. That'd be a fun place to visit. The U.S. economy fell 10% in size between March 31st and June 30th of 2020. The United Kingdom's economy fell 20.4% in size during the same time.
And that decline was much less than had been anticipated. The anticipation was the decline would be much greater.
For the U.S.
That's another reason for the United States, and that's another reason that... Well, it's interesting to look at us compared to the world, but also in light of reality, it declined, but it wasn't nearly as great as they anticipated.
As it could have been.
Have been much worse, indeed.
So the Food and Drug Administration, in order to approve a vaccine, the Food and Drug Administration requires that the vaccine must be at least 50% effective. The yet-to-be-approved COVID-19 vaccine must prevent half of the people who receive the vaccine from becoming infected with the COVID-19 vaccine. Is a 50% approval rate or effective rate okay with you?
That's a little bit less than I thought it would have to be.
That's
vaccine.
Like asking, how do you feel today? Oh, so,
50-50.
Are the flu vaccines, if they're approved, they must be the same thing.
It's the same thing. Right. It says because it must be, because it says they have to be at least 50% effective.
I would think the bar would be a little higher, but...
Well, according to 49% of 1,056 American adults surveyed in mid-May 2020, they plan on getting the COVID-19 vaccine as soon as possible.
2020.
40 or 51% either will not get the vaccine immediately or are not sure what they will do, and that's from the National Opinion Research Center of the University of Chicago.
So if only 50% of the people are going to get the vaccine... And it's only 50% effective. What is the end success rate of getting the vaccine? That's in quite inquiring minds want to know.
I know. Well, that's again.
I think it's
I'm
all
just
psychological,
reading the stats.
Though. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's psychological. A lot of people are just really afraid. But if you look at and the stats are, they're hard to pin down if they're accurate. How many cases do we have? And then this rate and the mortality rate and whatever. But I think. Your chances of getting the COVID and getting seriously ill or dying, and I should say this is mm-hmm. my opinion I'm expressing. Be
sure.
Clear about that. I think the stats will back it up. Very, very remote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was reading a stat the other day that 60% of the populace is not even going to get it. They're not even subject or possibly they may possibly get it. But I don't know whether that's accurate or not at all. But it's interesting. All these, I think that's part of the reason we have all these conflicting possibilities going on in our minds about, what is the actual danger of this thing? Mm-hmm. When the actual populace, we're looking at 200,000 maybe who will die in the United States. Not that that's a small number, but it is a small number compared to other pandemics in the actual death rate.
Yeah. As of August 8th, 2028, 58% of American COVID-19 deaths occurred in individuals at least 75, while just 1% of the victims were under the age of 35, and that's from healthdata.gov.
Okay, what percentage got it over age 75 again? What was that?
58% of American COVID-19 deaths occurred in individuals at least 75.
Oh,
while just 1% of the victims were under the age of 35, and that's from healthdata.gov.
So. The decline in hospital stays has been dramatic, down 25% from its peak, from its second peak. The numbers are showing that the actual cases are declining dramatically. We're at all-time lows in terms of increase, not seen since mid-March. Okay.
All right, I've got one more, and I think this one's pretty interesting. This is from the U.S. Coast Guard. There are 57 cruise ships either sitting at or anchored near U.S. coastal cities waiting for the Center for Disease Control to lift the suspension of their industry. Many of the ships remain anchored at sea in order to avoid port fees that can exceed $10,000 a day.
Wow.
So
incredible,
cruise
industry.
Who's having fun out on those cruises? Like,
yeah, the
there's
crew.
Probably 30, how many people? That's a next, see, I got to find that out. How many people are on these cruise ships?
Want to buy a cruise ship?
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of vaccines, in phase three, which is the final trial, there are six candidates, vaccines in large-scale efficacy trials. Six candidates. And what they're saying is some of them are saying they may be ready by the end of this year.
Yeah.
Many at the beginning of 2021. But a few have been quoted as saying they think it may come to market this year. Very interesting. Sinovac kicked off phase three trial in Sao Paulo this month and expects to monitor volunteers during the next 3 months. So it's going to be very interesting to watch, given these six vaccines that are in phase three. All right, Heidi, we're going to be talking about the Social Security tax.
Right.
Tell us what you mean by
that.
Well,
this is a topic that I ran across while I was studying for my next designation, and I thought it was really interesting. And it is how much of your Social Security income, or what you get from Social Security, is going to be taxed, that you're going to pay income tax on. So how it works, it is determined by a person's provisional income, or PI. So what is provisional income? Well, provisional income is calculated using your modified adjusted gross income, or MAGI, for those in the business may know that term. And that means that is adjusted gross income less taxable Social Security benefits, okay? So we start with that, then we add non-taxable interest, then we add 50% of Social Security benefits. So it might make a little more sense if we take a look at an example. So we have Oscar and Jane, and they're a married couple. Jane files for benefit, and she collects $24,000 a year. Oscar is still working, and he earns $55,000 a year, plus he has a pension from an old employer of $12,000 a year. So their PI works out like this. They have $67,000. And that would be the $55,000 that Oscar makes plus his pension income. They don't have any non-taxable interest to add, so that's a zero. And then they have to add 50% of Jane's Social Security benefits, which was $24,000, so that would make it $12,000. So you end up with $79,000 as their PI. So the PI of $79,000 is over the $44,000 limit on the chart, which indicates that 85% of Jane's Social Security benefit will be taxed.
Oh, anybody remember when that was brought in? When that was started?
The Clinton White House years?
Actually, Bush.
Bush.
George H.W.
The first Bush.
And he said, read my lips.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Taxes. Yeah, he lived to regret that one.
Mm-hmm. No, new
no new
Texans.
Social Security taxes.
Except for.
That's right, yeah.
So just to let you know the chart for married couples, there is a Social Security income is tax-free for married couples earning $32,000 or less, that PI number. For singles, it's $25,000.
So your Social Security benefits can be subject to tax.
Correct.
Yes.
So if you are under $44,000 and above the $32,000 as a married couple, up to 50% of your Social Security income is taxable.
You see, with the benefit of possibly looking at your RMD this year and knowing that you don't have to take it, could be helpful in not paying tax on your Social Security benefits, Ron.
Exactly.
Isn't that incredible? There you go.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
And then I'll give you the top bracket, which our example fell into, Jane and Oscar, the $44,000. If you're above $44,000, then up to 85% of Social Security income is taxable.
So it's important to review those taxes and important to know, perhaps even before you retire, exactly how much tax am I going to pay? And you may be surprised. Many times as we're working, of course, those taxes are taken out automatically from our payroll. But if we're getting Social Security, we have to take a required minimum distribution. We would have some municipal bond interest, as referred to non-taxable, including our Social Security benefits. It may be a surprising amount. All of a sudden, we're paying much more tax because we don't have those little deductions running around anymore inside the house. And we don't have the mortgage interest that we can use as a deduction. We simply take the standard deduction because it's called tax simplification. Now, the overall tax bracket is very low, but understanding that your Social Security benefits may be taxable may make it somewhat less appealing and or point to the benefit of delaying your Social Security benefits for a bit longer.
Right.
I was thinking that, but I just didn't say it.
Yes. Good, excellent.
And also, this just brings us back to something we talk about a lot here.
You know what? I'm sorry. But you know what that reminds me of? What is his name? The gentleman who's on the TCM late at night. Well, not late, but 9, 10 o'clock. He always talks so fast.
Shapiro. Ben
oh,
yeah.
Ben Shapiro. Gosh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. That sounded a lot like him.
Talk
oh,
so fast.
Exactly.
Yes.
So what I was trying to point out, Dennis,
yes,
was
sorry about that.
That there are some nice alternatives of income. Your Roth IRA, there is no taxable event when you take money out of a Roth IRA, so it would not add to that PI number when you take money out of there.
What is, when people are at that point where one of the couple is going to retire, one might keep working, or they start to withdraw from accounts or collect Social Security. Mm-hmm. There's so many different situations. There's not really a formula to figure out what your tax rate will be. So what should you do?
You should come into Prout Financial Design and have the financial plan done, because when you do the financial plan, it runs all these possible scenarios alongside the dreams that you have in your retirement.
Wow.
What you plan on spending money on, and it makes you think as a couple, really helps couples get on the same page as much as possible about things they've never talked about. Well, I don't want to own an RV. I want to go stay in a condo by the kids. Well, I wanted to take an RV and... Well, hold up. So a lot of those conversations come up, and right now we're offering our client discounts. So all of our clients can do the financial plan at 50% off. So we are offering that right now to anyone client or no client. So,
it brings all this into focus. Yeah. It's not just the lifestyle, which is incredibly important, but it's also the financial side. Should we wait on the Social Security benefit? Should we take our distributions from our retirement accounts early in this? Should I work a bit longer, a bit shorter? Do I have the options? It's amazing. Mm. Removing a lot of the mystery of it.
Yeah.
Boy. Mm-hmm. So it's not for the weak of stomach. I mean, right. You are going to need help trying to figure all this out.
It's not just about having someone manage your money. It really isn't. It's more, much more about, you know, how do we make this work for us, and working through some of that. It just, you know, as Shay mentioned, that if you are married and or with a significant other, if you can get on the same page, how much generally happier are those years going to be? Just because you know, I'm sorry you can't have that RV or whatever it might be.
Mm. Okay. So I just have a few key takeaways if we have time. One is remember that PI number counts all income that is part of that calculation. And this includes pensions, dividends, and property rentals. So that's a little bit different than an earnings limit. This is a different kind of...
provisional income?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not private investigators. It's provisional income. Thank you.
And people should be, people should be aware that non-taxable interest from municipal bonds are included in that PI formula. So
just when I thought it was home free.
That's right. Well, I would say those are like just a couple of the key takeaways, because a lot of times property rentals or pensions aren't included in a calculation, and this time they are. So
great point.
A little tweak.
So the contact information when you bring up Prout Financial Design, Shea Patasia?
Our office is 947-3992. Your first meeting with us is complimentary, so you can have us look at things and see if we can help you. Also, if you want to do the financial plan, give us a call. Meg will get you scheduled either way. And we have classes coming up this fall, so in October you'll be able to do our October classes. And we got a lot going on.
ProutFinancialDesign.com.
Correct. And we're also on iTunes with this show. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at ProutFinancialDesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, FinancialDesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.